Hello, I'm Elizabeth Kwan. This is number 0355, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0355. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Frank Befira, who talks about the growing business of sex robots.
A sex robot, just to define it for you, is not a love doll, which doesn't have any moving parts. That's a lifeless thing that you either blow up or comes preassembled and doesn't do anything. A robot means that it actually has functioning movement, that it can interact in some way with you as a user, okay? Being robots, they have working parts and pieces in them that move and contract and interact with you.
Actress and screenwriter Kim Coff is back on the show to talk about her upcoming film, Experiment 77. She just nabbed a major star for a role, Malcolm McDowell.
Dr. Stone, and he's actually the genius scientist, the mad genius, behind the curtain type of thing, like the Oz, as you may have it. You know, it's a really pivotal role, obviously, and it's really, I'm just really excited. It's going to be fun to work with him.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Among other things, he talks about bodies being dumped in the trash.
NYU, which is a big deal university in New York, has a medical school. They've been running short of having a body for research. So they said to, I guess, a certain number of people that if you would leave your body to us, we would use it for medical research. And when we're finished, then it would have a dignified burial. And a number of people signed up for it. It's sort of like the donations, I guess. Well, it now turns out that after NYU was finished doing whatever they do to the bodies, they took the bodies and just threw them away in the garbage.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0355, was Elizabeth Kwan, a researcher at City University of Hong Kong. She's working in the positive psychology field, exploring the relationship between memory bias and anxiety. Sounds like pretty heady stuff. Pardon the pun. Thank you very much, Elizabeth, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Pennsylvania couple was arrested on a charge of theft after allegedly stealing more than $200,000 from their boss and using the money to buy lottery tickets. Cressona police said that they have arrested 51-year-old Joan Lechleitner and her fiancé, 54-year-old Carrie Titus, who are employees of the Agway grocery store, after being accused of stealing $175,000 from the store before winning more than $200,000 by buying a winning lottery ticket from the same store. The couple was charged with theft, conspiracy, and records tampering. According to the police investigation, the couple, along with two other employees, stole from the Agway store over a period of 5 years. The employees used the stolen money to buy lottery tickets from the store, including the ticket that won more than $1 million. Lechleitner won a total of $261,904.50. After having financial difficulties, the store owner installed hidden cameras, which captured the suspects stealing money and buying lottery tickets. Okay, this is just a case of plain-out greed. I mean, you know, perhaps after you've pulled in $250,000 on lottery tickets that you actually got from stolen money in the first place, perhaps you should just call it a day and stop stealing, huh? Yeah. 55-year-old magician and professional gambler Brian Zembic finally consulted surgeons recently about removing his historic C-cup breast implants, which he had bore on a $100,000 bet back in 1996, with a rider of $10,000 annually for retaining them. Now, He also won a companion game of backgammon to determine who would pay for the original surgery. He told news sources in May that he had intended to have them removed early on, but that they had kind of grown on him and became a normal part of his life. Hey, whatever floats your boat, dude. Whatever floats your boat. A Massachusetts high school student went to a doctor the day after prom to remove the boutonniere pin she accidentally inhaled before the party. Kathleen Garvey, a senior at Wellesley High School, said her prom date, Colin Emerson, was having trouble keeping his boutonniere from falling off during the bus ride to the prom, so she placed the pin in her mouth while adjusting the floral arrangement. A likely story, actually. He made some funny joke, and I laughed and inhaled it, but didn't positively know what had happened, she told local news. I wasn't in any pain or anything, and the only thing happening was I was coughing, so I just assumed it went missing. The teenager said she was eventually satisfied that the pin had been lost and went to the prom, where she ate and drank without any pain or discomfort. Garvey's mother took her to the doctor the following day as a precaution, and an X-ray quickly revealed the pin's hiding place. It went down my throat, down my trachea, and in my bronchial tube right before my lung, Garvey said. Doctors were able to remove the pin with a scope and determine there was no damage to the teenager's body. You know, in all seriousness, we joke about this story, but really, isn't this the most innocent prom story you've heard in a while? Besides the misadventure with the pin, it sounds like the kids had fun. And clearly this is a girl who talks to her mother because she told her about the pin when she got home, which moved the mother to get an X-ray the next day. A happy ending all the way around, don't you think? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, U.S. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, in a May publication, deriding the value of certain federally funded research, highlighted several recent National Institutes of Health and National Science Foundation projects, such as the $13 million for exploring musical preferences of monkeys and chimpanzees, the $1.1 million judging whether cheerleaders are more attractive seen in a squad than individually, the $390,000 to determine how many shakes a wet dog needs to feel dry, and the $5 million to learn whether drunk birds slur when they sing. Also strangely included was the actually valuable study by Michael Smith of Cornell University ranking where on the human body a bee sting was most painful. He found from personal testing that on the penis was only the third worst. Research that brought Smith a prestigious Ig Nobel Prize last year. Uh-huh. By the way, the worst two places for the bee sting before the penis would be the nostril and the upper lip. Good to know. That's valuable information. I don't care what music chimpanzees listen to. I'm just guessing it's country. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Sex robots. They're freakishly realistic, and until now, it would have been unthinkable, but we could have them in our homes and beds this year. On the line with us right now is digital media visionary Frank Befera to talk about sex robots. He joins us via Skype from Florida. Hi, Frank.
Hey there. How are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So we've seen them in movies. We've seen them in sci-fis, but they're a reality now?
Oh, yes. They're real out there. These robots are actually having sex as we speak.
Wow. First of all, who's buying them? What do they cost? And how do you maintain them?
Well, they're very expensive right now, because most of them are prototypes or in very low production. So most sex robots right now, which in a sex robot, just to define it for you, is not a love doll, which doesn't have any moving parts, that's a lifeless thing that you either blow up or comes preassembled and doesn't do anything. A robot means that it actually has functioning movement, that it can interact in some way with you as a user, okay? So just let's make that distinction, first of all. So being robots, they have working parts and pieces in them that move and contract and interact with you. So as a result of that, the pricing is pretty pricey right now. For a full-body sex robot, either a male or a female, you're looking upwards of $4,000 right now for ones that are available. And most are coming out of Japan. There is a company out of California that is producing them right now, but they're just torsos at this point in California.
Now, you say most of them are coming out of Japan, but where are most of them being sold? Are they being sold a lot in the United States, or is it something that is more of a European buy or an Asian buy, for that matter?
Well, right now, for about $1,000, you can have shipped to America a sex doll from that's being built in Japan. And this sex doll is capable of movement. It's capable of full-on intercourse. And it ships, right to your door in the United States of America. So people in America are buying these things. It is, like I say, a cottage industry, but it is something that is going to grow and grow and grow and grow.
And is there any part of the United States right now where this is something that is not legal, or is it legal everywhere?
Well, right now, people are having a little trouble with the legislative side of this thing, because let me tell you a quick story here. There's a sex robot that's available right now that is 2 feet and 4 inches tall. It looks like a little girl, maybe a slightly post-pubescent teenage girl. It is wearing a black dress. It wouldn't be something that you would use out in public. If you want to bring her out to a restaurant, it would be like you were having lunch with your daughter. But people are having these shipped into their homes, and they are doing, whatever act they want to do with this doll that looks like just a post-pubescent little girl, which is a very sick thing, obviously. But it is just a toy, right? It is like, what would be considered a masturbator or a vibrator that happens to have the look of a human being. So how do you legislate that being illegal? You can't really legislate that being illegal, because it's merely a toy, right?
Hmm. Are there issues? I mean, are you not concerned about people objectifying the opposite sex through these toys, especially ones that you just described, which is could be seen as a gateway to dealing with young people in a real way?
Well, sure. I mean, there's all kinds of, social and moral issues that go along with this. But let's take it back a minute to current devices that are available at your local, sex toy shop or online. If you walk in, you might get two or three rows in your local sex shop of vibrators, various other mechanical devices that you connect to your body, and you use them to take the place of a human being, right? And all of these things, let's just use women, for example. All of these things that women go and get are phallic in nature, right? They're the dildo, it looks like a male penis. It may have a motor in it. It may even ejaculate. So this is something that in today's world is something that young women can buy at 15, 16, 17 years old, and can take the place of a relationship they might have with a real boy. And many women, 20s and 30s, use this type of a device every single night, every single morning to achieve orgasm, and they don't even have a meaningful relationship with a man. So we're not too far away from just adding the rest of the body right now, are we?
I guess not. When it comes to these realistic sex robots, who's buying them? By that I mean, is it more men than women, more women than men, what?
Well, it's strange you'd ask that question, because the interest in these robots is primarily coming from females. There was a recent study done by a company of U.S. Of the U.S. population by Tufts University, and they asked 57 males and 43 females their interest in having relations, sexual relations, with a robot. And listen to this really interesting piece of data. 6.7% of the men and 9.8% of the women said they would be interested. So the females are more interested in sex robots in this recent study than males are.
And do we have any idea why that is?
Sure. I think that women are looking for, some way to, get all of the effects of having a relationship without all of the negatives associated with having to deal with, men out there.
I find that kind of interesting only because, historically we've been taught that men have sex just because they want to have sex and not because they need or have a desire to be in a relationship, but women have sex because it brings them closer to a particular person and they want to have a relationship, and that's why it seems more meaningful for them. You're telling me that, at least according to these statistics that you've brought up, that's not the case, at least in the percentage of women who are interested in sex dolls.
Oh, but you're forgetting. These are robots. These interact. These have mouths and faces and personalities. These touch you. These interact with you. This is not just a nameless, faceless, lifeless thing. Robots take it to the next level. Let's take this example. Have you ever heard of those little robot dogs made by Abo?
Absolutely, yeah.
The little robot dogs, and they interact with you, and you tell them to go and fetch something, and they run and fetch something, and they come back. Women and girls love these little dogs. Guys, it's really cool, but I want a real dog, okay? This is the same type of reaction that women are having to sex robots, because now this is not just a nameless, faceless, lifeless dildo or vibrator that they stick in their drawer next to their bed. This is a real interactive being that they can have a meaningful relationship with, which is what they need to have a loving sexual contact, right? So now this becomes much more appealing to women than a nameless, faceless, lifeless love doll or dildo or other sex device that they could be using. So I think that's the difference here.
Wow. Where do people get them?
Well, they're available online right now. If you type in sex robot, you'll find a whole bunch of different places that are actually selling them. There are a number of companies, mostly in China and Japan, that source these, and they are coming along. And let me tell you the next big thing. That is virtual reality sex robots. And in this case, you strap the robot onto your body, including your private parts. It connects to you. You strap on your virtual reality goggles and headphones, and you decide who you want to be having sex with. And in your virtual reality world, and with your physical body, because of the sex robot that's attached to you, you have sex with whomever you want in virtual reality.
Wow. Now, this is not...
This is available technology right now.
This is not something I talk about a lot on the program, but I understand it's something you get to talk about a lot. Now, you are working with livingsexyradio.com, correct?
Yes, I am. We have a five-day-a-week radio program, 10 o'clock Eastern time on livingsexyradio.com. We're also on the air in Tampa Bay, Florida on WWPR. And we talk about this kind of stuff all the time. Now, my passion has always been the electronic side. They'd call me Frank Electric because I love the electrical side of sexuality. And so this sex robot thing is really my bailiwick. Last night on the air, as a matter of fact, we talked about a brand new brothel that they're going to be opening up in Amsterdam that will feature sex robots that you can rent out for a short period of time and have a sexual relationship with. So it's really something we get to talk about a lot on our show.
And again, we should mention that website. It's livingsexyradio.com, correct?
Yes, it is. You can go there and check out everything we've done. We've got over 500 hours of programming you can download. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for MixingSexy.com. That is our social media and dating site where you can meet other people, talk about all kinds of different issues. And we'd love to meet you on there as well. That's MixingSexy.com.
Frank, thank you very much for being on the program with us. It's been a pleasure and an eye-opener to talk to you this day.
Very good, and we'll see you at that brothel out in Brussels or one of these other cities with sex robots very, very soon.
Yes, the times, they are changing. That was Frank Befera. Again, you can find out more information by going to their website at Living Sexy Radio, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0355, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the actress and screenwriter behind the movie Experiment 77. They just got a major coup in casting for one of the roles in their film. We'll talk about that. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do, of course, have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And, of course, lots more Stuff File news right here, right now. On the program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, the president of the New England Organ Bank told U.S. News and World Report recently that she attributes the enormous upsurge in donations in recent years to the opiate epidemic that has produced a similarly enormous upsurge in fatal overdoses. Now, one out of every 11 donated organs comes as a result of the overdosing that in 2014 claimed over 47,000 lives. An organ-sharing organization chief medical officer reminds that all organ donations are carefully screened, especially those acquired from overdose deaths. Do you feel safer now? Do you feel more inclined to ask, just where did you get that kidney? Yeah. Okay, we've got a couple of stories here that can probably go under the headline of Nature 2, Florida 0. Number one, Nicole Bienes, casually zipping along Interstate 4 in Volusia County around noon on May 4th, saw a red-eared slider turtle come sailing through the air and crashing into her windshield, sending her car off the road. The Florida Highway Patrol said the turtle had become airborne after being hit by another car. It was apparently unhurt and swam away when a firefighter released it into a nearby pond. And number two, the following day, May the 10th, police in Key West responded to a caller at the scene of a giant banyan tree, common to Florida and featuring vertical roots that thicken, spread, and become entangled with the central trunk. A woman had attempted to climb the tree but had fallen among the vertical roots, making her barely visible. Said a proud police spokesperson, they popped her out like a cork. Gotta love Florida. Yeah. Okay, this next story is more in line with what we usually share when we talk about Florida. 26-year-old Porlencia Turner was arrested on May 13th at Vero Beach, Florida Outlets Mall after she allegedly walked out of a Claire's store with unpaid-for earrings tucked into her waistband. Police reported her crying and angry and complaining that everyone steals from this store. Why are you picking on me? Well, dear Porlencia, I'm reminded of the story of a person caught speeding once. When the driver complained, everybody else is doing it, why are you picking on me? The police officer just calmly asked, have you ever gone fishing? The response was yes, to which the cop replied, have you ever caught all the fish? Yes. Point well made. Moving right along, a discount store in Leesburg, Florida called police to report a galloping horse kiddie ride in front of the store had been stolen. Security camera video showed that a man dragged it away by its power cord. The man, dressed in a Superman shirt, was found nearby, and Cesar Alexis Diaz, age 27, was charged with petty theft, criminal mischief, and wait for it, molesting a vending machine. I didn't know vending machines could be molested, but anyway. Diaz told police that he had been threatened by a man over money, so he broke the coin box open and gave the man $40 in quarters. That's probably how Lex Luthor got his start. Yeah. And Natalie Williamson says Kenneth Williams wanted her to return his backpack to him at her front door. He'd thrown it through her window, according to her daughter, while trying to break into her Oklahoma City home. While he was hanging from the window, Williamson says, I got a crutch and started slamming him in the face with it, and he wouldn't let go. So I picked up a vacuum out of the hallway and started slamming him in the face with the vacuum. He still wouldn't get down. So I proceeded to punch him with my fist, and he jumped down. That's when he asked her to come to the front door. She did, wielding a knife. She and her neighbors chased and caught him, and then the police arrested him. He's been charged with burglary. He may have wanted to clean her out, but he was the one who got vacuumed that day. Yes. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 74-year-old Lee Ann Sabine gave an interesting quote just before she died. People are going to talk about me after I have gone, she said. Why? Because of the body in the bag, she told her hairdresser. That wasn't the only time she joked that the well-wrapped item she told someone else was a medical skeleton from her nursing training was, in fact, a real corpse. When a friend opened the package after Sabine's death, the contents turned out to be her mummified husband. Detective Chief Inspector Gareth Morgan said he thought Lee Ann Sabine had killed her husband. A forensic pathologist said John Sabine had been hit in the head with a blunt object, and the shape of his injuries was consistent with the stone frog the Sabines had kept by their bed in the Welsh village of Bedau. And by the way, she committed that crime 18 years ago. And do you know, they have 5 children they abandoned in New Zealand many years ago as well? Talk about a lack of communication in that family. Also, and perhaps a lack of inquiring friends for John. Yikes. That's just a creepy story. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? We spoke to actress and screenwriter Kim Kopf before. It was back in February when she talked about the horror drama set in a mental hospital that she had written called Experiment 77. Well, she's just snagged a major star for her to play opposite in the film. Malcolm McDowell It's a major kudo because not only does he know a thing or two about institutions, having been the star of Clockwork Orange, but he also is one of the busiest and sought-after actors around. Kim is back on the program with us from California via Skype to talk about her film once again. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So,
yes, definitely.
So when you wrote this story, and we talked about it before, it's a story that takes place in an old institution called Safe Haven that's not exactly run with the best of, shall we say,
ethics.
Well, I was going to say intentions and
yeah,
also
there you go.
And also funding. So you were writing this. Did you ever think when you were putting this together that, you know, maybe I'll get somebody like Malcolm McDowell to play a part in this?
No, I didn't. I actually feel really blessed about it. And we have an amazing casting director, Pamela Staten. And the director actually has a relationship with Malcolm, Max Leonida, who's amazing, and his wife, Paola Cipollina, who is my producing partner. And it all just came together really nicely, and I'm really excited. We're still in pre-production, but we're putting together a nice list of really amazing actors for the pivotal roles. So I think last time we spoke, I did have Jonathan Goldstein from the TV show Josh and Drake, and then also Ian Harvey, who's just signed on for this season for Mistresses. He was on Transparent. He's an amazing actor. He's signed on, and we're just moving along, and I feel really happy, and the way things are developing. And Max, the director, and I are going to do a rewrite of the script, and I'm very, very excited about that.
Well, speaking of the script,
yes.
One of the things, and I'm going back to Malcolm McDowell here, as I said in the introduction, he's an extremely busy actor. I mean, if you
yes.
look at his list of credits, that's one thing when you look at what he's done. But when you look at stuff that is in pre, post, or filming production as we speak, it's a situation where clearly he's not going to take anything that just falls on his doorstep. So when you, and I've talked to a lot of writers, and they always, a lot of actors rather, and the thing they always talk about is it's got to be on the page, it's got to be the script. So it's got to be fulfilling for you to know that someone who is as busy as Malcolm McDowell says, wait a minute, I like what I see here.
Oh, yeah, it's very fulfilling. I'm very excited about it, and I haven't had the opportunity to actually meet him yet, but I'm very much looking forward to it. And our goal is to be in production by mid-October, so, yeah, it's going to be an exciting time. I feel really lucky. That's for sure.
So what will the role be that Malcolm will play? I understand it's a fellow by the name of Dr.
Yeah, it's
Stone.
Dr. Stone, and he's actually the genius scientist, the mad genius, behind the curtain type of thing, like the Oz, as you may have it, you know. And, you know, it's a really pivotal role, obviously. And I'm just really excited. It's going to be fun to work with him.
So when, as I know, scripts often go through a myriad of rewrites before they get to the screen. You said earlier that you're starting to rewrite it. Do you rewrite it now knowing that you have him as one of your stars? Does it change the dynamic of what you put on the page?
Well, we have our letter of intent from him, you know, for the funding, you know, for the proposal to get the funding. And so, yes, it does change. I mean, I obviously want to, you know, make his role really, you know, juicy for him and something that, you know, is like just going to, he can knock out of the park. So now with him in mind, Max and I will be doing the rewrite and, you know, we can actually cater it to him, you know, a little bit more. As you were saying, like in the beginning, I didn't know who would play that role. But now that, you know, we have someone in mind, we can just kind of, you know, tailor it to fit him, you know, in the nicest way.
Now, when we spoke last time, you mentioned that there was a character for yourself in this movie, a kind of a Nurse Ratched character you described
yes.
her as before.
Dr. Olivia West. Yes.
So will there be a lot of interaction with you and Malcolm McDowell as the script plays out?
Yes. So Dr. Olivia West and Dr. Stone have a love-hate relationship, and they're working together at Safe Haven. And then in comes another psychologist, actually, Daniel Miller, and he kind of throws things into an unbalanced atmosphere, I guess I should say. And I will have a lot of scenes with him. So that's really exciting for me as an actress, that's for sure.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, I know you've been at this game as an actress for a while, so
yeah.
It's nothing new to you. But now that you know you're playing opposite Malcolm McDowell, is it like, oh, gee, I have to step up my game here?
Yeah, I guess you could say I would be a little bit, maybe a little bit nervous at first. But you know, I just have to stick to the work, and you know, and just go in there and just take the best shot. You know, just. Batters up, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you would hate to have him in the middle of a scene go, oh, wait a minute, who's the writer of this thing?
Yeah, that's okay. I would just put my head down and put my hand up ever so slowly and say, that's me.
Okay, so you hope to start shooting this in October.
Yes.
Are you on schedule as far as when you initially started doing this as to what you would like for your release time for this film?
Well... You know, I think that the release obviously is not going to be this year, so it'll be in, you know, next year in 2017. But that's okay. You know, I just think that when it's meant to come together the way, you know, it will. And I don't want to rush anything. I think that sometimes, you know, in the past I've been on productions that have rushed, and maybe that wasn't the best, you know, route.
Are you, I mean, we also discussed in the last time we talked back in February that this is a low-budget film.
A little over a million. I mean, yeah. You know, low-budget, yeah.
But
low-budget for studio purposes, yeah.
Exactly. Sure. But with the acquisition of an actor like Malcolm McDowell, does it make it a little easier to fill out the rest of the cast the way you'd like with people who are itching to play opposite or play in a film with Malcolm McDowell?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We actually, because we're doing a rewrite of the script, we haven't finished our casting yet of all the major players, but we're really excited about the role of Rose. It's a young 20-year-old, and we want to get a really great, you know, beautiful, amazing, charismatic 20-year-old that's very up and coming to play that role. So we're really excited to cast that.
Well, again, congratulations, kudos. Every time we talk, there seems to be another milestone that you're passing, and now you have such an actor like Malcolm McDowell on board with your film. Again, the movie is called Experiment 77. Is there a website people can go to find out more information?
We have a Facebook page, Experiment 77. And or you can look at my Facebook page, Kim Kopf, and then Inch. I have my married name on there also, so Kim Kopf Inch. Or you can go to IMDb, Experiment 77, or you can look up on my page, Kim Kopf, K-O-F. And yeah, you can find out, you know, all the latest and greatest.
Excellent. And again, you're hoping to start shooting in October with a release date sometime next year, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Kim, thank you once again for being on the program with us. A pleasure to talk to you again.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Peter. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.
Screenwriter and actress Kim Kopf. The film she has written and will star in is called Experiment 77. You can find out more info by going to her website at kimkopf.com or on their Facebook page. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0355, and you'll find links to both. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you ever used the drive-up window at a fast food restaurant for a late-night snack after the main part of the restaurant had closed? If so, you may be interested in a lawsuit recently filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago against McDonald's. A lawyer representing a blind man in Louisiana has filed a class-action lawsuit against the popular fast food chain. The attorney alleges that those late-night windows violate the Americans with Disabilities Act. He says that since his client can't drive, he can't place an order at McDonald's late at night like other customers who use the drive-up window when that's the only part of the restaurant still open. Let's be fair. One of the reasons fast food restaurants don't have an option for late-night pedestrians is the potential for serious accidents. People on foot might get hit by cars, exposing the restaurant to more lawsuits. Sadly, one of the possible outcomes of a lawsuit like this is that all restaurants across the country would be affected, not just McDonald's, and that they would simply stop providing late-night windows. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the beautiful streets of New York. Although it looks like it's going to rain any minute, and that's a taxi driver's dream.
Ah, yes. Yes, yes, indeed. One of the things I want to talk about, looking at your website at Gabby.com, stories about people who donate their bodies to medical science. Apparently there's some sort of controversy happening there.
Yeah, well, NYU, which is a big deal university in New York, has a medical school, and they've been running short of having bodies for research. So they said to, I guess, a certain number of people that if you would leave your body to us, we would use it for medical research, and when we're finished, then it would have a dignified burial. And a number of people signed up for it. It's sort of like the donations, I guess, in a way. Well, it now turns out that after NYU was finished doing whatever they do to the bodies, they took the bodies and just threw them away in the garbage.
Wow. So
that's right. That is a big wow.
So what happened to them after that? I mean,
well, that's past tense. Now we're talking future tense. I don't know what's going to happen to the school. I imagine, I don't know that there's a criminal thing about it, although I guess you can't just throw bodies in the garbage. But I'm sure family members, because remember, we have a very litigious society, will probably sue NYU for something or other. And it's kind of strange in a way, because NYU has the reputation of being the big deal liberal left-wing civil liberties union. It certainly doesn't sound like they were looking out for the masses on that one.
So just in the garbage, not like even Potter's Field or some unmarked grave or something like that, just out with the trash.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, I could have used the word trash so as not to affect the sensibilities of your nice listeners. I specifically used the word garbage because it is so much harsher. But that's what they did. They threw Auntie Sally in the garbage.
Unbelievable. Wow. Meanwhile...
Well, that's why I'm your chief correspondent, because I ferret out these things.
Unbelievable. Meanwhile, elsewhere, I understand that the NYPD has been boarding some buses. Why have they been getting on buses?
Well, you know, we had kind of... I guess it was a period there was kind of cool. And then all of a sudden, the weather got very warm and sunny and hot and everything. And I guess somebody at the Board of Education noticed that there was a lot of kids missing from school. So they asked the police department to kind of monitor the buses that go to our beaches. Because remember, New York City is a real water baby. We are on the ocean and we have lots of beaches. So what they started doing, like the scene from a German war movie, is that if the bus was heading towards the beach, the cops would board it, Achtung, Achtung, and check to see if there were any truant kids on the buses on the way to the beach. And sure enough, they hooked a bunch. Again, I don't know what they're going to do to them. You know, that's what happens. You go after people for doing wrongdoing, but in the final analysis, you know, so what are you going to do to the kids? I guess they'll get chatted up by their parents.
Hmm. Meanwhile, we talked about garbage a little while before, and my head is still reeling over the bodies in the garbage story. But having said that, I understand there's another problem with garbage, and that is rat sightings and also noise. Which is worse, rats versus noise?
Well, they came out with a report that New York City has tons and tons of rats and lots of noise. I got to tell you quite honestly, we may have millions and millions of rats, and I'm not talking about the humankind, but really, you very rarely ever see one. It's not like you're strolling down Fifth Avenue. So that's a little bit of urban folklore. As far as the noise goes, this is the noisiest place on the face of the earth, because if you start counting up all of the cars, all of the honking, the air conditioners, every possible noise, this is a very noisy place. So we have a system here where if it's an emergency, you call 911. That's for the cops to come a-running. But if you have a more calmer problem, like noise, you call 311. And it turns out that noise is the number one complaint that's called into 311. And with the summer here now, and people being outside more and having their windows open and what have you, oh, is it going to be noisy? But my answer to that is, if you're not happy, move to Wyoming.
You always make absolute sense with everything you say, Mr. Franklin. Now, one of the other things that's going on is they're trying to ban free newspapers, or at least the free newspaper hawkers on public transit. What's that all about?
Well, I don't know if you have it in your neck of the woods. You have the major newspapers, you know, in New York, it's like the New York Times, the Daily News, and you got to buy them. But in all the different neighborhoods, they're sort of like cool neighborhood newspapers. And what they do is they give away the papers, and the way they make their money is just from the advertisement. You know, they call them throwaways. Anyway, unfortunately, when the people are finished reading them, that's exactly what they're doing. They're just throwing it away. And it's becoming a very big problem in the subways, because what happens is that when the people don't put it in the bin, these newspapers go flying onto the tracks, and they get caught on fire because of the third rail and what have you. So the MTA, which is the Metropolitan Transit Authority, has just banned the giving out of the free newspapers in the subways. It's sort of like censorship in a way, and it's unfortunate. But that's what happens when people are pigs.
Yeah, but isn't it just this, because they say they can't give them away on the subways, what's preventing them from giving them away just outside the subways, outside of the MTA's jurisdiction?
Yeah, no, and that will happen, and they'll stand outside the steps and what have you. But many people have gotten, you know, very used to having the newspapers in the subway.
Okay.
That was a cough. Fresh air coming from your studio is killing me.
Meanwhile, what's this story? I mean, is it even true, the story about Kim Jong-un's aunt?
Wait a minute. What are you, a wise guy? Since when do you dare question the truthfulness of your chief correspondent? Let me tell you something. Living in New York City, I don't have to lie about anything. Now, my story is true, but from whence it comes, I think it isn't, and that is this. The Washington Post reported this past week that Kim Jong-un's aunt, on the maternal side, had asked for asylum from the United States. So the CIA brought her over here and set her up in business, where she's running a dry cleaning store and a tailoring shop along with her husband. And to add to the whole thing, the CIA gave her a $200,000 house, fully paid for, to live in.
And this apparently goes back 20 years, right?
Well, but I mean, do you believe the story?
I don't know. I'm asking
you. I believe what I'm saying, but I think the Washington Post is either full of baloney, or they got their information from the wrong place. Of course, the CIA isn't making any, statements about it. So what I've done is I've written to the North Korean government and said, if they build a $200,000 house for my wife and I, we'll move there.
Would you really, Peter? Would you really?
Listen, when my wife and I retire, we're going to retire to either North Korea or Zimbabwe.
Whatever floats your boat, sir. In the meantime, What is your celebrity sighting this week? I understand that this week's celebrity sighting to you is almost like your own personal first lady.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting enough, I've seen her and her husband a number of times. I even debated whether I was going to put it on the website. I'm talking, and we're talking about Rhea Perlman, who is the wife of the patron saint of all taxi drivers, Danny DeVito. She's a short woman. There's no question about that. She has a very pleasant aura to her. And many times when I see a celebrity on the street, people walk right by that person without really recognizing them. Well, let me tell you, everybody recognized her, and they were just stopping and staring. But she is a true New Yorker. She is around the city quite a bit. And she said that everything she ever learned about broadcasting, she owes to that guy, Peter, what's his name again? The guy who has the online show, Peter Anthony Alder, that was it.
Yeah, I doubt it. But where did you see her?
What?
Where did you see her?
On the street near Central Park.
Ah, cool. Did you speak to her?
Hey, if you don't believe me, I'll get a note from her the next time.
No, I believe you. I mean, I've seen all the pictures you put up in the past of the celebrity sightings you've had.
Peter, let me tell you something. Seeing a celebrity in New York, I make a bigger deal out of it than it really is. It's not unusual to see them. It's a little bit unusual to recognize a lot of them, because without their makeup and their hairdo and everything, they really, you know, they really don't look the same. But somebody like the DeVitos, you couldn't miss them. You really couldn't.
Well, sir, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I should mention that people can find your website, which is www.gabby.com, and they should check out the places where they can get tours from you, because you offer great tours of New York City. And those tours begin literally from the time you pick people up at the airport, right?
Yep, indeed.
Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in a little bit. I also have another Stuff File story I want to share with you. But first, just want to mention very quickly, we'd love to hear from you here at the Stuff File program. Just send me an email with your thoughts and questions about the show, and we'll respond. Just email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And some of the questions might even make it on the air in our mailbag section. So please, send us your emails. And also, Facebook users, we urge you to join the Stuff File fan page. It's easy to find. It's at facebook.com/thestufffileprogram. We'd love to hear what you have to say and also have you as part of the fun. The more, the merrier. And remember, this is a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, getting back to the stuff, a robber hit a store in Gainesville, Florida, and successfully escaped with cash. Police, however, tracked the robber's getaway car. It was a rental from the Avis branch at the Gainesville Regional Airport. But that car had not been rented. Dead end? No way. Security camera video showed an on-duty Avis employee, 18-year-old Montrez Christopher Hollis, drive the car off the lot, and he matched the robber's description. The car was equipped with a GPS tracking device that showed it indeed was driven to the store at the time of the robbery. When confronted, Hollis admitted to the robbery and was arrested. He said he needed the cash to cover losses for an online scam. So, it was a common case of doing something stupid to recover from doing something dumb. You know, I almost made this guy the idiot of the day because he certainly does qualify, but I didn't. But now, boys and girls, this is the moment you've been waiting for, because it is indeed time for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
St. Lucie County, Florida sheriff's investigators pulled over a car after it allegedly sped past them. According to the investigators, the driver, 27-year-old Kathleen LaRoche, apologized for weaving and speeding and admitted her license was suspended. Because, you know, they always have a suspended license in these stories, don't they? One of the officers noted that she had a dashboard camera and asked if he could see the video. LaRoche said he could. and he saw what happened prior to LaRoche driving past them. The video captured LaRoche purchasing cocaine just prior to the traffic stop. The resulting report also noted that police were able to identify and locate 43-year-old William Hills, who had allegedly sold $30 worth of cocaine to LaRoche. Hill was arrested on drug charges while LaRoche had cocaine possession, cocaine purchasing, and possession of drug paraphernalia equipment added to her charge. Smile. You're candid on your own camera. I mean, why, oh why, would you conduct a drug deal in your car that you record on your own dash cam? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0355. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0355. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.